I will read chapter 13, which we're on. I'll take off my glasses so I can actually see it. And the dragon stood on the shore of the sea, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea. He had 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns on his horns, and on each head a blasphemous name. The beast I saw resembled a leopard, but had the feet of those of a bear and a mouth like that of a lion. The dragon gave the beast his power and his throne and great authority. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have had a fatal wound, but the fatal wound had been healed. The whole world was astonished and followed the beast. Men worshipped the dragon because he had given authority to the beast. And they also worshipped the beast and asked, "Who is like the beast? Who can make war against him?" The beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies and to exercise his authority for 42 months. He opened his mouth to blaspheme God and to slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. He was given power to make war against the saints and to conquer them. He was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast, all those whose names have not been written in the book of life, belonging to the Lamb that was slain from the creation of the world. He who has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to go into captivity, he will go. If anyone is to be killed with a sword, he will be killed. This calls for patient endurance and faithfulness on the part of the saints. Then I saw another beast coming out of the earth. He had 2 horns like a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. He exercised all the authority of the first beast on his behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose fatal wound had been healed. And he performed great and miraculous signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to earth in full view of men. Because of the signs he was given power to do on behalf of the first beast, he deceived inhabitants of the earth. He ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. He was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that it could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. He also forced everyone, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on his right hand or on his forehead so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of his name. This calls for wisdom. If anyone has insight, let him calculate the number of the beast, for it is a man's number. His number is 666. Okay, well, we started on this chapter, and so I'll do a little review of some of what we've talked about so far. We saw that Satan the dragon was ousted from heaven in the prior chapter, and he can no longer accuse the saints before God after the cross. Basically, the cross, by covering their sin, made that so. I don't think the dragon knew that was coming, though he did everything he could to destroy the cross and the birth of the church. Now, Satan continues on earth fighting God. But while he can inflict pain on God's people, and indeed he's after them, we see that in the prior chapter, they are sealed and protected from him on earth. So he is limited in his direct power on earth. He doesn't have the power that he once had. He can no longer accuse them before God, and his power is limited by God's decrees on earth. Now, he tends to work mostly through what's called beasts in chapter 13. Beasts are, as we knew from Daniel, are human empires or authority structures or systems of human control. So what you see is not Satan operating, you see humans who are doing his work. Now, he raises up these beasts. We gave the example a couple of weeks ago of Adolf Hitler and how Satan did a miraculous set of things to bring him to power, so he could use him as a beast. But we also know that he can only do that under the structure of God's eternal decrees. So that while he has the ability to raise up beasts who will inflict great pain and challenge the church, and all beasts challenge the church one way or the other, if you don't think that's happening, you'll need to look out and figure out that it is. He's limited, and we saw that back in Isaiah when the Assyrian Empire was raised up and attacked Israel and Judah? Well, the Assyrian Empire did great damage, but God made it clear he had raised it up for his purposes, even though Assyria didn't know this. Assyria thought, oh, I'm just conquering like I'm conquering. And in fact, Assyria is judged ultimately for, in fact, claiming what God has done for himself. Basically committing the same sin Eve committed at the beginning, saying, I am God, not God. Which all sin kind of roots into self-idolatry. All idolatry roots on self-idolatry. Now, the dragon's goal is to be worshipped by a man accepting his values and ideas, but as I just mentioned, the men don't see that. The humans see themselves as augmenting themselves. They don't see themselves as worshiping Satan. But just like Eve wanted to be as God. She didn't want to worship Satan. She wanted to worship herself. But she accepted Satan's words and worldview. So in the process, she really was worshiping Satan and his ideas, thinking she was worshiping herself. So humans don't see reality here. Now, in verse 8 of chapter 13, it says, all those names have not been written in the book of life belonging to the Lamb that was slain from the creation of the world. In verse 8 it says the Lamb was slain from creation of the world. What does that mean? How the Lamb was slain, you know, in 27 AD is the normal date we give it. But, you know, even if it's 25 or 33, it doesn't matter. How is it that the slain Lamb was slain before that? What does that mean? Edie.
That God had preordained all of this.
That God had preordained all of this. And if God preordains it, it's as good as done. In fact, it's safer than done. It's going to happen. And that's a big deal. And in fact, we get great comfort from that. Notice Christians cannot have regrets if they're being rational, like people of the world have. When people of the world die, it's like, if only, if only, if only. When we die as Christians, we may think, well, there are things that I would prefer not to have happened quite the way they happened. But because God preordained it, they actually are for our good. And there are things I wish I hadn't done from a sinful point of view. But God has so arranged it that this life is cleansing me and perfecting me, and it is cleansing and perfecting those around me as well. So we don't have those regrets. And of course, we don't have the regret that Elizabeth I had, which if you didn't have any other regrets, you'd have this one, which is, I can't believe it's all over, is what she said. Which is an appropriate, I think that's the best summary statement of being an unbeliever and dying you can have. I can't believe it's all over. Everything I dreamed of, cared about, and lived for is gone, or about to be gone, and it doesn't matter anymore. Whereas a Christian, as we're going to see in the next chapter, blessed is he who dies in faith. So it's a very different kind of picture. Because for us, what's happening on earth is going to lead to eternal benefit. So our dying is not, I mean, if Karen dies, it may be very uncomfortable for me, but for her, she goes to be with the Lord in heaven. And now, when she gives prayers, God himself will be visibly there hearing them. When I give prayers, I don't get to see that. Now, this is kind of a semi-review question, because I talked about some about this last week, but I want us to kind of reconsolidate this point. How is it that the beast, if it's an empire, opposes the worship of God and attacks God. What are the means? How does the beast do that? There we go.
So in America, we have freedom of religion, but that's not the same around in other parts of the world. It can be outright opposed, or a country, like the mentality, undermines Christianity, and it's not an outright law or per se, but in one of your earlier talks, you said how back in the 1950s, it was, you were all Christians, but the church didn't preach from the Bible.
Yes. Yeah, so they can oppress. You know, you could oppress by force. If you live in a Muslim country and you say, I'm a Christian, you might wind up with your head on a pike at the end of the day. You could oppress by informal force, where the culture tolerates crushing Christians. Like we know somebody who's missionaries in Pakistan. And in Pakistan, often Christians will be accused of falsehood by neighbors that want to grab their land. And the government, they have two sets of courts there. There's government courts. You don't go there. You go to these Sharia courts. And they're much more sympathetic. So you've got that kind of, and then we had the kind of American oppression, which is more subtle, but it wasn't that subtle. I mean, we have a system where we accredit seminaries. That requires conformance. Accredit universities. That requires conformance. Once you've got that, you've got a big problem. And we've seen that more clearly in other countries where it's less subtle, like when Frederick the Great said to the seminary that turned out the Pietist ministers during the Pietist revival, you will accept modernists. That is, people who don't really believe the Bible is true, and let them transmit that through the church. And the seminary submitted. Now, the proper thing probably would have been to say, okay, bye-bye. We're going to do that seminary from now on. But they submitted and allowed the system they had built to spread Christianity to become an instrument of the beast. That's a direct assault. How else does the beast?
Well, there's physical assaults. So the Russian army destroyed the church of the two pastors that were here in Ukraine.
Okay.
They, on their way out, they burn it down.
So there you go, direct invasion. And you,
invasion and assault and persecution.
And that's one where you really see it, don't you? It's pretty obvious there what the beast is saying. Any other thoughts? John's going to get his exercise here.
I mean, just as another example of maybe more subtle oppression, I mean, I think we've just observed this, haven't we? Like, you make people and churches afraid of something, and you forbid them from doing things like gathering. I mean, I can't think of oppression that's much worse in a lot of ways than keeping Christians from gathering, mm-hmm. or making it a sin, or making them feel ashamed before the world of gathering.
Okay. That would be a way. Of course, we've even seen in Canada where they do that and put pastors in prison who violate that particular proposition, and they tried to do it in California, too. The Supreme Court ultimately said no. But
from one side to the other. The Russian Orthodox Church has endorsed Putin's moves.
Mm-hmm. So there you've got a situation where the church is co-opted by the state. Traditionally, that's called Caesaropapism, but who cares what it's called? The idea is simple. if the church and state become cooperative and friends, then the state can impact the state church. So like if the government's supporting the church financially, then Putin actually gives money to the Russian Orthodox Church. You can have churches that have been perverted by that. So the government can seduce you. So the beast doesn't have to use hostility. It can be your friend in name. But when you wake up one day, and if you're not believers anymore, don't be surprised. Yeah, so those are all ways. Now, you can also have the government just make comments or express social ideas in leaders and officials. They'll say blasphemies or untruths. Talks about in verse 7, slandering God's name, and sometimes people in government will say things that implicitly do that. Verse 11, we talk about calling forth another beast, which we'll talk a little bit more about this, the second beast, but that kind of fits more the idea of the government perverting the church or creating its own church to challenge the truth. And so you've got this situation where the government can do a lot of things. I mean, it's like the school districts when Illinois passed that law that said you kindergartners have to learn about gender change operations, which this is a law in Illinois that if you have to, if you're a school, bring in people to teach that. The kindergartners. I mean, that's just perverse. But there it is. But even before that, there were lots of school districts that were open to that sort of idea and kind of moving in that direction anyhow, because of the university system that had been set up and how it trained off education majors with certain kinds of presuppositional biases. So we find ourselves in a world, because the beast isn't just a government, the government is part of it, but the beast is kind of a broader sort of a thing. It represents a whole system of authority. So there's lots of authority out there that we don't necessarily think of it as the government. Accreditation authority at universities is a good one. I've never heard anybody talk about liberty from accreditation authorities in universities normally. I mean, that's not a big topic. But if you use your accreditation authority to start perverting what people are going to get taught, you're going to have a profound impact over time. And if you also... you can also do it more subtly. For example, if we look back at Isaiah, he's talking to the Jews, and he says, don't fear what these people fear. And what he means by that is, in Isaiah, the secular Jews, the people that don't worship God, have certain things they're really afraid of. And so they're going to go off and make political alliances with pagan powers and compromise with the world in order to prevent those things from happening. He says, don't fear those things. Fear God. Care about what he says. The government can encourage you to fear not what should be feared. I will take one that... this is the most controversial one I can think of, so I'll take it. Global warming. Now, I believe global warming is existing, and it occurs. And I think National Geographic may be right when they say the oceans will rise 3 feet by 2100 if nothing is done. I'll be long dead by then, but that's not my reason for not caring about it. But My bigger reason is, once you get people to fear something other than God, you can manipulate them. So in the name of global warming, governments can take power. They can build political alliances. They can steal money. Or if your fear is fear of other races, or fear of other people groups, or fear of fundamentalists, fear of something. And of course, an extreme case of that is if you're in a communist system where it's basically you're afraid of anybody who wants any liberties because they're capitalists. Decentralization is the enemy. The state is to be worshipped in that sense. That's pretty clear. Here we go, Al.
But we know the elite don't really believe it, else no one would buy seashore estates.
Are you thinking about Al Gore's mansion on the Florida coast?
I'm talking, yeah, Barack Obama's got a $20 million estate in Martha's Vineyard and another equally large in Hawaii, both of them on the ocean.
But he'll be dead by 2100.
Obviously. But 2100 is what, who knows what the real forecast is, even if it's right.
Well, that is true. And in fact, every time National Geographic does a forecast, I'm reminded of a National Geographic I read in 1980 when Jimmy Carter was president, and it did oil production in the world, and it was going up for a little while, and then it was going to flatten out, peak at 2012, and by now it would be down substantially. They weren't right. I know that even better from, I went to MIT as a grad student, and I get this newsletter from them, and they make all these forecasts. They're never right. Never. I mean, if they were doctors, I'd run away, because they tell me you're dying and I'm going to be in perfect health, and they tell me you're great and I'm die the next day or something.
Isn't one of the real problems with this passage that God is the one who identifies who the beast is?
Yes.
We don't have the ability to say, there it is, or here it is. And that we're sort of lulled into a false sense of security because we really don't know who the beast is. And arguably, you know, is the beast America? I'm just thinking that way, you know.
Yes, I think every society has a beast. And that beast is always there. It takes different lies, and it's always twisting things because it's the world. We're dealing with a system that is controlled by people who are not believers in general. And even if you are a believer, you're swimming upstream. And that system is going to be perverse. It may be perverse in a way that's obvious. If they're burning down churches, I think they're not Christians. But it may be perverse in a way that we don't see because we're not quite seeing where they're going. I mean, let's take the news, which to me is part of the beast. Now, the news doesn't... I know all the time, my wife used to listen to the news. I don't listen to it much. A synopsis at the end of the month will do just fine. And it's amazing. The news doesn't have to say a lie. All it has to do is spend its whole time talking about people who are rich and famous and powerful. Now, that's a giant lie in itself, because they're telling you that's what's important in life. The whole book of Revelation is saying it's irrelevant if you're successful, if you're rich, if you're powerful. It's of no value. All that matters is that you're following the Lord. But even Fox News never says that. And I know a lot of people, Christians, like Fox News, but they don't say that. If you listen to them, they have that same worldly focus.
I have a kind of clarifying question. I think in the past I've always seen like the first beast and the second beast as like this like a chronology, that there's a time order there. But it just occurred to me that, or I'm wondering, do you see the, and the headings aren't inspired, right? In the text, right? They're inserted. But is it more like the first kind of beast and then the second kind of beast? Do you see what I mean? Where it's not so much temporal as it is like a typology. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think conceptually, you're making a good point there, an interesting point. Conceptually, in the passage, you get the first beast and you get the second beast, so you think of them as different. But I think they fit together more closely in real life. I mean, the first beast calls up the second beast. The second beast supports and worships and encourages the worship of the first beast. So they're kind of fellow travelers, as it were. And sometimes it's not so clear which one is which. Now, it's helpful to think about that. It's helpful to think about the fact that the first beast calls up the second beast, which as we're going to see later on in Revelation, serves certain purposes. In fact, let's talk about the second beast right now a little bit. But the second beast is a cultural instrument of the first beast through which it moves in society. So then, in some sense, they fit together. So we're told in 13:11 that the second beast has two horns like a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. What's it mean to have two horns like a lamb? What was that comment?
Lambs don't have horns. They grow them later.
I beg your pardon?
Lambs do not have horns. They grow them later when they get bigger.
When they're sheep.
When they're sheep.
Yeah. Now that's a really... See, if you're not a farmer or a person who's ever seen a lamb, that'd be a big insight, wouldn't it? Yeah, it probably he had nubs then. Go ahead. Yeah.
Also, I think horns sometimes represent leadership or a kingship.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, probably what this means is the lamb has a superficial appearance of being religious or of values and for values. He may even be, in certain cultural cases, claiming to be a Christian church. Because I think heretical churches can serve the purposes of the beast at various times in history. But he may also be, like the Roman Empire, their false religion. The Temple of Zeus or whatever. But the lamb has this claim of moral authority. That's kind of what I think the two horns are telling us. That he speaks with morals. There are moral values and you should follow them. And so the lamb, this lamb creature means we should, if you're a good American, you need to be concerned about whatever we're concerned about. I'll give another example that shouldn't be controversial, but is in our culture. The lamb speaks of, or the lamb-like appearance speaks of racism and its evil. Now, racism is a great evil, and it was used to support great evil in American history. But in the process, the lamb ignores the fact that that evil came about because there were men who were self-idolatrous who would enslave other men. When they couldn't enslave their fellow Europeans anymore because they came to the United States and the Europeans would just go off into the wild and you couldn't control them, they came up with a new excuse to crush men. So you were misled. You think this one manifestation of the sin is what's critical, but in fact, there's a deeper, broader sin there. They will oppress someone. They will enslave someone. That time it was racism. Next time, it may not be. And if you focus just on the one, you miss the other. And in fact, if you look at the Old South, one of the things that happened in the Old South was when the sons of nobles, and that's who they were sons of English nobles. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but a huge percentage of the castles in England, if you go visit the castles, if you read the plaques, it was funded with sugar money or money from plantations in America. And English industry was based on cheap cotton that came from plantations in America. So it was all part of a ruthless system to enable some men to live well at the expense of other men. Now, in the South, what happened to the poor whites was, people who didn't own slaves, was the slave plantations drove prices below equilibrium, what you could sell in a free market, and basically destroyed those people's ability to be fundamental economic entities, which is why a huge percentage of them wound up as sharecroppers. And then when the South wanted to fight a civil war, guess who got drafted? And guess who could buy their way out or got exempted? You know, so if you were poor white trash, you were sent off to die. If you were, there's one plantation in South Carolina that got 367 exemptions from the draft. Guess who got the top few? All the men and who were in the family. And because they needed that control over the slaves. So these people were absolutely ruthless towards lots of people in their system, not just the slaves. So it was just a perfect example of the dragon and what it was doing. Now, but then we're also told the thing speaks like a dragon and it comes out of the earth. So what's that tell us about this lamb that claims to speak morally and so forth? Speaks like a dragon and comes out of the earth. It tells them they're speaking with the voice of the beast. They're speaking with the voice of Satan. Now, the New Testament has a variety of passages that warn us of this. So, for example, if you look at 1 John, oh boy, I've got so many passages here. This is the problem. If you have too many passages, you get in trouble. Where is the 1 John? Ah, here it is. 1 John 2:18-23. Dear children, this is the last hour. That is, it's the end times. And as you've heard that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have come. This is how we know it is the last hour. They went out from us, but they did not really belong to us. For if they had belonged to us, they would have remained with us. But their going showed that none of them belonged with us. But you have an anointing from the Holy One. And all of you know the truth. In other words, one of the voices, one of the things that happens is there are people that claim to be Christians, and then they show that they're not. So that's one of the voices the Lamb will utilize. So you've got people who are heretics in the church teaching false teaching. Matthew 24, At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. false prophets. And of course, that was a problem in the Old Testament. The whole book of 2 Peter is basically about false prophets and Jude. 2 Corinthians 11, 13 through 15 says, "For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It is not surprising, then, if his servants masquerade as servants of righteousness. Their end will be what their actions deserve." So you've got people who claim to be one thing. They claim to be moral and upright. They claim to speak the words of God, but they're not. They're liars. They're speaking evil. They're following their father, Satan. And we saw that in Revelation chapter 2, both with Thyatira and Pergamum. They were heretical teachers within the church who were teaching lies. And that's one of the things Jesus is warning these churches about. He wants them to watch out for these guys. They're people who are going to come in, and they're going to say, "Well, you don't need to really obey what God says. You can have your cake and eat it too. You can do what naturally is pleasant for you as a human and still be a Christian." And you know, when the Reformation occurred, there were people who deliberately taught about Christian freedom as if it was freedom from moral law. But the scripture never said that. It's freedom from ceremonial law and human rules and so forth. That was never it. We are saved by faith alone, but if your faith manifests itself in nothing, then you don't have genuine faith. And there are people who just deliberately perverted. I think that was one of the things that Martin Luther was forced to face up to as he went along when he was very young. He talked about James was kind of a strawy epistle, and he put it at the back of the Bible. Later on, he put it in the right spot and realized James was a necessary part of the picture.
Quick question. So with the second beast, I kind of read it as if it's a person or a system that has these Christ-like qualities, but then there's some very specifics, right, that performs miracles and calls down fire from heaven and appears to come back from the dead or a mortal wound. Are we thinking this is one event? Or is that?
No, I think what happens is the second beast utilizes religious symbols and imitates what God did. I mean, the mortal wound, it's clear that's an imitation of Christ's resurrection from the dead. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that mortal wound in a minute. And they are able to do things that look impressive and look like they have true religion. Remember, we talked a little bit about that a couple weeks ago, about how in temple worship, a lot of the temples had developed tricks to fool people, like they'd have children that sat inside the statues and would talk. The story about Alexander the Great sending a spy at night to see the priests let the children out and feed them and stuff. We'll talk about being oppressed as a kid, spending your day inside a statue talking to people as if you were a god. And then at night they feed you. Gee, thanks. I don't think those kids were sons of nobles. But they also had there was the show I mentioned in the History Channel where there was a guy who had these ingenious devices to make it look like the gods were real when they weren't. And there were people who constantly were working on ways to fool people, to imitate what God had done, to make it look like they were from him. Now, so you can, as you see the second beast operate, at times they will claim miracles by trickery. How about a healing of fatal wound? That clearly is an imitation of the resurrection of Christ. But how do you heal a fatal wound?
If it's fatal, it's obviously not fatal.
If it's fatal, it's obviously not fatal, says Al, for those listening to the tape. Sometime in the future. If it's fatal, it's not fatal. That's a good... But, okay, thank you, Mar. Mar warns me I have 4 minutes. But I submit you can do this in a variety of ways. Through trickery, through mythology. That is, you can say something's true and claim it was fatal, but it wasn't fatal. And what's more, they had a great advantage in doing this. And this is hard to underestimate the power of this. We're going to see as we look in this chapter, we're going to go back to chapter 13 here, something else that happens. He also, the second beast forces everyone to receive a mark, or they cannot buy or sell. Now, I want you to understand, if people can't trade, that's a big handicap. Like if you're in a field and you have to go to the pagan festivals. And if you have to go to the pagan festivals and claim you believe certain things, it's a lot easier to believe them. You have an incentive. In other words, if you reward people for believing it, they'll all say it, and it will become much more plausible to each other. And lies, therefore, can be perpetrated and spread, and it's very difficult to challenge those lies. And that's exactly what happened with the pagan festivals. You had to accept things that were mythology and weren't true, but if you needed to and you couldn't do business without claiming to believe it's true, it's a lot easier to believe it. I noticed that at the university when I was a professor, and I've told you the story before. My chairman sent me down one day and said, "Neil, you seem to think your job is doing research and finding out truth." And I thought, "Isn't that what my job is?" And he said, "No, that's not your job. Your job is to publish. That means you find out what the editors want and you give it to them. And of course, if all the editors want certain things and they control the journals, we're all going to say the same dumb thing." Which is why economics has gone through a 50 years period when it made no progress at all. Now, this was all in God's decrees. In fact, you might just say, gee, this kind of shows the system's got some rottenness in it, and for 50 years you have all these really smart people pouring in their lives, and at the end of the time you've learned nothing. I don't know about the last few years because I'm retired and don't watch anymore, but maybe they've made vast progress since I went up and retired. But I haven't noticed it in the news. So you've got this system going on that is fundamentally and essentially making it easy for falsehood. Now, if you were all younger, I'd all talk to you about Facebook and that kind of thing, where you all hear these lies all the time and you believe, oh, most people in the world live this wonderful life that I'm not a part of. And apparently, it's astounding how that system works. I recently talked to a relative and she said, I said something is a lie. And she got real mad at me. She said, well, my friends claim to be Christians and they believe it. And I said, well, Christians sometimes are wrong. And she just wouldn't accept that. If my friends say this, then it must be true. Well, you get a whole generation that starts thinking that way, they can believe all kinds of dumb lies. Now, You can't go exactly by me because I probably took a perverse pleasure in being different. I think that's called arrogance, isn't it? Self-pride is my own version of self-pride. But just talking to this relative is appalling. I mean, it actually depresses me. Is the whole generation like you guys? One person says it on Facebook, so you all believe it? Ah! No Facebook. No computer. No television. Yeah, right, the grandkids will love that, won't they? Anyhow, well, I am out of time, so let us close in the word of prayer. Let me just mark here where I have stopped. Gracious Lord, Satan is clever, and he knows how to harness our own self-interest and our own weaknesses. But you're better. You're greater. Your decrees stand. Your wisdom stands. I cannot look out my window and figure out reality. I must turn to you and what you say in your word. And your word says, you have a wonderful plan for everyone who is yours. You're sealing us. You're protecting us. You're making us better for all eternity for having been in this fallen world. May your name be glorified on, O Lord. May we recognize the wonderful nature that you have that so manifests itself that you care about us and you walk with us and you suffer with us. Glory to your holy name. Amen.